Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of The Tech Stack. Thank you so much for joining us today, wherever you are. Now, I'm curious to know how many of us really consider cybersecurity when it comes to healthcare. Our personal data is often a concern when it comes to banking or even just signing up to a new online shop. But what about the world of health? We're moving further and further towards a world of connected devices, the Internet of Things. And within healthcare, this of course means a great deal of data being shared, which is always going to be very personal. So, what is the answer? Well, thankfully, we have people like Mike Murray on the case, founder and CEO of Scope Security. Mike, welcome to the show.
Thanks, it's great to be here today.
Oh, a real pleasure to have you on board with us. We're obviously going to touch on Scope Security in this episode, but I'd like to start by clarifying the need for security in this space. If I think about myself, and if I'm a bit honest, I don't know if it's something that's ever really crossed my mind. So just how important is cybersecurity when we're talking about the healthcare industry and us as patients?
It's incredibly important. And you're right. You don't think about cybersecurity with your health data until you lose it. And so the numbers have been coming out over the last few years. There was an Accenture study 5 years ago, 4 years ago now, that said that the lifetime loss for a healthcare organization in the United States that has been breached is about $125 million when you add in the cost of lost patients, lost revenue, lost brand. You know, you think about healthcare is really a trust-based business, right? If you are worried that the building's going to fall down on you, you're not going to go in for a CT scan, right? And if you're digitally worried about the same thing, you're going to pick, at least in countries where you have options, you're going to pick the other option. And so it's become really obvious, and we've seen more and more the news that really, or the breaches that hit the news, are the big ransomware attacks, right? WannaCry shutting down the NHS, UHS in the United States losing, you know, shutting down basically large parts of their entire nationwide system for a couple of weeks. But the bigger and longer tail is all the other breaches. It's the lost information. It's the time that, you know, you went to the doctor and you found out that your identity got stolen because the hospital you went to lost your information. It's become an incredibly important thing in the healthcare industry, and it's really become a CEO and board level issue at this point.
So if you are a cyber criminal and you're talented enough to be able to access those systems, the potential of causing danger to people's lives is really vast there. As you say, identity theft, who would consider that when walking into hospital?
Well, right. But the funny thing about the information you lose in the hospital versus the information you lose other places, if I steal your credit card, you call Visa, you report your card stolen, you have a new credit card a week from now. If I steal your health information, that's good forever, right? I know of cases where hospitals have found people using, and this is a U.S. specific example, but it's sort of a true statement all over the place. Hospitals finding people coming in using fraudulent insurance cards and going to get treatment and having the wrong blood type, right, on the records. This is not just a fraud issue. It's also a patient safety issue. But it's also because these things have such a long life. There's a trite old statistic that, you know, a credit card on the black market is worth like $1.50, and a health record on the black market is worth like $300. And, people can debate the numbers, but that order of magnitude is really about the time value of the data. You know, if I steal your insurance information, as long as you don't change insurance carriers, I have that information about you forever. And that doesn't even count the other potential for that information. We like to talk about advanced persistent threats in security, or APTs, which basically means nation state actors performing espionage. Well, if you think about what is valuable for people in an espionage context, like a few years ago, widely believed that the Chinese were behind an attack against the Office of Personnel Management of the U.S. government, where they stole all of the background check material. Well, why do you steal background check material for people in government? It's so that you can blackmail them, so that you can use that information against them. Well, what is more powerful from a blackmail perspective, in a lot of cases, than people's health information? right? I know your sexual preference. I know, you know, things that are happening in your household. I can, you know, I know about your kids. I can learn so much about your personal, deeply held personal life that if I want to blackmail you later with it, I can use it. Also, it's evergreen, right? You know, whatever your health status is today and has been for the last 5 years, if I steal that, it's not like that information is ever wrong. So the time value of this data is so long, and it's so useful in so many ways that it's incredible to me that we haven't thought more about it.
And this must be an issue which is continuing to grow as well. I think about here in the UK, a lot of the NHS services now are via a mobile app. You have companies like Babylon Health who work with the NHS to, I mean, brilliantly save you from going into a waiting room and into somewhere where you might potentially catch a bug. But then actually, that's just another system, isn't it, that could be breached. We're all very conscious about your bank's mobile app, but again, thinking about an NHS version, it's another option for someone to target.
Oh, and it's worse than you could ever imagine. On our podcast, and I know you know we have a podcast as well, I interviewed somebody, this incredible security researcher the other day named Alyssa Knight. And Alyssa just did a paper on 30 mobile apps in healthcare. And she found all 30 of them were able to be breached and all of the information stolen out.
Oh, wow.
And part of that is, you know, if you think about people who are developing apps for healthcare, and this is a broad sweeping statement, but it's generally true. You know, if you're developing apps for banks, there are security standards and there have been long practices, and people have this sense like, of course I must secure financial data. You know, part of my background, I used to be in charge of security for medical devices and services at GE Healthcare. And the most interesting thing about that is every developer I ever talked to really felt the passion of their mission to build this incredible thing to help health. But security is not really a thought when you're on that mission, right? Security is an afterthought and has long been an afterthought. And so, you know, in the United States, the FDA didn't have any regulations around security for all of this medical software until 2014. You know,
wow.
Banks have been thinking about cybersecurity since the 90s, and we don't get regular. And you know, we had regulations like PCI and all of those regulations more than a decade ago, and the medical industry came to it far later. And so there's real opportunity for the bad guys, and there's real value for the bad guys to attack hospitals. And it's why over the last, you know, 3-4 years, the acceleration curve of attacks against healthcare is just continuing to increase. And at the same time, there's just this incredible pressure in the healthcare industry to increase connected technology. You know, connected technology spending in healthcare is growing at an exponential rate. And so you have these environments that are already not easy to secure, and you're bringing in more and more tech and moving more and more data around without necessarily thinking about those things. It's the perfect storm for a lot of people. Mm. And it's what caused us to start our company, but we're not the only ones. There's a bunch of folks in the startup space that are trying to solve this problem before it gets really bad. Like the worst case scenario is we start seeing patient deaths because of this, and nobody likes to talk about it. And you know, I especially don't want to get into that sort of FUD kind of fear, uncertainty, and doubt, you know, the sky is falling thing. But at the same time, if we don't get this straight, it's going to be really hard to continue to innovate in healthcare.
So you've nicely brought us on to Scope Security there, your company. What are some of the biggest challenges you're trying to face? Of course, you talk about the connected devices. I'm sure you'll be able to shed a bit more light on to exactly how integrated they're going to become into the world of healthcare. But what are the main challenges that you guys face as well and also trying to solve?
You bet. So there's an old rule in security that risk visibility comes before risk management. It's hard. You can't manage something you can't see, and you can't stop threats that you can't watch in your environment. And the healthcare industry has always struggled. The security industry has long built most of our products and services with the idea of selling to banks first and government second, or in some cases, government first and banks second. But it's never anybody but those two, right? The overwhelming majority of cybersecurity spending, you know, 10 years ago was concentrated in those two areas. And so it made sense, and it continues to make sense for most cybersecurity companies to focus on those environments as their primary markets and everybody else as a secondary market. Well, that works for most people, right? You know, a cube farm at insert company here doesn't look that different than a cube farm at Lloyd's Bank, right? It banks and normal companies look pretty similar, but there's almost nothing that looks less like a bank than a hospital, right? And so, and that's from a technology perspective, from a people walking around perspective, from, you know, from an organizational politics perspective. And so the world of financial services has always had really great security visibility to detect attacks and stop them. It's why you don't often hear about Bank of America or Citibank or one of the big banks getting shut down by ransomware. But you do hear that about hospitals, because hospitals have this problem where it's not really one technology environment, it's three, right? They have laptops and desktops and, you know, Oracle databases and servers, just like every other company in the world. And for that stuff, they have pretty good security visibility, right? You can run antivirus on a laptop in a hospital, just like you run antivirus on a laptop in a bank. But then in that same hospital, and often in that same room, there's all this medical devices and clinical technology, which look a lot more like what you find on an oil rig than they look like modern technology. Medical devices take a long time to build and develop, and they often have real strong regulatory requirements in getting them to market. So you almost always find these medical devices running incredibly old pieces of software. There's almost no hospital that I've ever seen that doesn't still have Windows 2000 and Windows XP on their network. And in a lot of cases, you know, Windows CE, I don't know if you even remember Windows CE.
That's going to be a bit before my time, I'm afraid.
Well, and NT4, which is even more before your time. Like, in fact, when I was at GE, and that was less than 7 years ago. I think it was about 7 years ago I left GE. We were still actively selling devices that ran Windows 98. And so you have to realize, like, securing my modern Windows laptop is very different than securing the same, you know, the same network that also has Windows 98 and like Windows Mobile and all this other stuff, because these medical devices are built on it. And then there's an entire control layer for the hospital called the electronic health record system, which everyone pretty much has gone to at this point. And it controls the entire hospital. Well, there's almost no security tools for the medical devices, because you're not legally allowed to put anything on the medical device. You can't take, you know, your CrowdStrike or your McAfee or whatever your endpoint is and put it on a medical device without invalidating the warranty. And then there's no security tools for the modern EHR. And so if you're a healthcare CISO, amongst all the myriad problems you have, and we can talk about staff, staff retention and staff acquisition and hiring and all that, because that's a huge problem within healthcare, but we'll come back to that in a second. Among all the problems you have really good visibility into your IT stuff. You have almost no visibility into your clinical stuff. And your EHR is just, well, I'm sure it's fine because the vendor says it is. And so when the attacker gets in, say the attacker phishes somebody's laptop and they get in, they see that happens, and then very quickly the attacker goes and jumps and sits on a CT scanner that's running Windows XP, and suddenly the CISO is left looking and wondering, where did this attacker go? One of our clients here in just outside of New York was telling me about an event that they had where the attacker, almost exactly what I just said, they phished a laptop. And then they were pretty sure that the attacker went and hit on a medical device. And what they did was they took their entire biomedical engineering staff for the entire hospital for 2 weeks, and they went machine by machine to every single medical device to see if they could find the attacker, and they never did.
And this is where you mentioned earlier how this sort of thing, you can start to see how it affects the patient, because that then means that a machine which could be crucial to someone's care is actually out of action.
Correct. Well, and you know, putting my business hat on for a second, think about how it affects the revenue of the hospital, right? If you've got to take your, you know, if this if this heart catheterization lab is generating for you $1 million a day in revenue, and suddenly you have to take it offline for a day so that you can see if there's attackers and malware sitting in there because you don't know, well, that's a pretty significant revenue hit. And I picked heart catheterization lab not just as a random thing. I've actually seen that scenario where a heart catheterization lab machine gets infected by malware and the hospital has to shut the whole thing down for a week at costs of huge, huge dollars, right? And you never really think about these things as part of the challenge, but at least in the United States, hospitals run at incredibly thin margins, and in other countries, Canada, the UK, like there's always budgetary pressure for anything that's government funded. And suddenly you've got all of these situations that are eating away at the bottom line of the hospital and can be incredibly difficult for the business leadership to accept. And it's frustrating for them, but it's frustrating for the CISO who's, literally calling engineers and having them go look at machines by hand. Like, when was go talk to a bank CISO and ask them the last time they had to have manual investigation of an entire part of their organization because they didn't have any security controls that would tell them what was happening. That's a 2003 problem, not a 2021 problem for most of the industry.
So taking this and looking forward, the devices, as you mentioned, have such a long lifespan. That's the reason why they're operating on these old OSs. But if you're at the point now where you need to build a new one, which is also going to have such a long lifespan, how do you overcome that challenge that it will one day not be able to be supported and updated as well as it should be?
It's literally the best question you could possibly ask, and I'm going to answer it in the worst possible way, which is you don't. you don't. So let's just break out the numbers for 2 seconds. So a medical device, if you were going to start from scratch today and build a medical device of consequence, right? An infusion pump, you might have an 18-month timeline to go from design to development. But the design timelines for things like CT scanners and MRI machines, these big, massive pieces of equipment, the design timelines for that is never less than 3 years and usually in the 3 to 5 year range. And then it usually takes about 9 to 12 months to get regulatory approval once you're ready, right? So suppose I started today in early 2021 to build a brand new world-changing CT scanner. My best case scenario is that probably comes out in 2025. And my worst case scenario is probably comes out in 2027. And now here's the challenge with that. If you go to Microsoft's webpage, and I'm assuming I'm going to build it with Windows computers, Microsoft certifies their operating systems for 10 years where they will provide patches and support and security updates and the like. Well, if it takes me 6 to get it to the market, by the time it's on the market, and I'm, this is a $10 million machine, so it's not like people are going to buy a new one every couple of years like they do with a laptop. Suddenly, more than half of the useful life of the operating system I've taken is during my development phase, and even once it's on the market, I expect the useful life of that machine in a hospital that buys it to be 15 to 20 years. So I start today, and that device is still on the market in 2051, and Microsoft's patch support has ended in 2031. What do you do about it? Because you imagine the hardware that I put out there today, it's not like it's going to run Windows 2050, right? Whatever Windows 2050 is probably, it's like, if you took your 486 computer from 1997 and tried to put Windows 10 on it, like it's yeah. just not going to happen. Like there's just no solution. And I think one of the first things we need to do is acknowledge there's no solution and start to think about how we solve this. But part of the solution is more risk visibility and more ability to monitor what we have so that we can keep it protected longer, even as it becomes obsolete. And that's a really hard problem, and people don't really want to talk about it, but it's going to become, over the next 10 years, a really huge problem. I mean, it is already, but I think more people need to acknowledge it, and people will start to really understand the scale of the problem.
And with that, you talk about monitoring. Is it not as simple, but is one of the solutions having more people in the industry? You mentioned obviously about you know, I can't think you use this phrase, but health tech is being used quite a lot these days, just like fintech was or insurtech. Health tech is maybe the next big thing. And is that exactly what the whole industry needs, that push to encourage people into this world?
Yeah, I think it needs the push. I think the other side to it is the realization that the reason to do the work on security is not just for protection and things like that. If we don't figure out how to secure these things, those health tech organizations are going to have a really hard time getting adoption from their customers, right? If a hospital wants to use a new technology, but knows if they use that new technology, they've opened themselves up to a breach, they're going to be more reticent to actually adopt the new technology. I've said for a long time, the thing that I think can be the most significant break or the most significant enabling factor for health tech adoption is the ability for each of those health tech vendors not to have to think about security and build it like their GE, right? They have to be able to move fast and innovate. But the only way to do that is to be deploying those products into an environment that's relatively secure. Well, right now, I don't think there's anyone in the world that would say that there's any hospital that is really relatively secure. And so, you know, each health tech vendor, if they're not doing the due diligence, they're opening themselves up to the potential of deploying in a way that ultimately the hospitals are going to have to take, because the hospitals are the ultimate holder of risk, they're going to end up slowing innovation to ensure that cybersecurity is the case. Whereas if we fix the cybersecurity problem and we get better monitoring in the hospitals and the hospital knows that their environment is secure, they can take more risk on innovative new products because they know that, you know, by adopting that, they're not going to potentially come up against a security issue.
You've alluded to the fact there that this is obviously worldwide as well. And, you know, you're in the States, I'm in the UK, but everyone needs healthcare. So is the effort also worldwide? Is there anyone who's really paving the way forward?
I don't know that there's anybody paving the way forward right now. I hesitate to say that we are. We're still a very small company, but I hope that we can really impact the direction of this. The real challenge is the security industry doesn't understand healthcare. And I was patient zero for that when I went to GE. I spent my first year at GE Healthcare getting pulled aside by medical people and sort of patted on the head and told, I understand that this is how this works in the rest of cybersecurity, but you need to understand how healthcare works. And I took that lesson to heart, right? And really took it seriously and started to really think about, okay, what does healthcare need for cybersecurity? But the thing about this is there are a lot of people working on the problem. And I think there are a lot of people that understand that there is a problem. But one of the things that I think most of this industry struggles with is the commitment to actually relearn that cybersecurity in different environments is a different thing. We've seen this over the last 5 years in the cybersecurity industry with the industrial control systems movement. After Stuxnet happened, a whole bunch of people started to realize that securing industry, securing factories and oil refineries and mining and all of these sorts of things was very different than securing a bank. And so there's companies like Dragos and Clarity that have come up that are solving specifically that problem, and they only solve that problem. Well, we're kind of in the first real wave with some of the medical IoT products like Medigate and CyberMDX and Scenario and Cylera that are focused on the medical problem as primary people, but we're all still pretty early. I think 5 years from now, we're going to really see more companies like Scope and like the ones I just mentioned proliferate that try to solve healthcare as a primary industry because it really is unique and it really does need to be treated as its own thing. It's not a thing that you can, you know, if you're FireEye or whatever, just say, yeah, I know we built this for banks, but hey, us too, we do healthcare, right? It's not as simple as just being able to say like, oh, we hired this ex-healthcare CISO. Now we have a healthcare business, right? You can't use the same product to secure financial services as you do to secure a hospital. It's trying to fit the rug to a room that it doesn't fit in, kind of thing.
But just from the way you speak there, it's evident how much passion you need to really fix the problems. And also for anyone who's coming into your business, that's obviously going to be a highlight that you look for, someone who's really willing to drive that change and also on top of their general cybersecurity abilities.
You bet. We're very mission focused over here. Everybody hears me talk about this stuff constantly. This is how our company kind of runs. But actually, it's always something that I've thought around recruiting that is so interesting is the importance of culture and the importance of fit. Like, you're right. Anybody I hire at Scope, it's because they are they have to have skills. Don't get me wrong. But if they're not interested in solving this problem, they're not going to last very long around here. You know, we buy medical devices off of eBay for fun to figure out how to secure them and do things like that. If you're not interested in that kind of thing, you're not going to fit very well here. And similarly, my previous job before I started Scope was as chief security officer of a company called Lookout, which does mobile security. When I was at Lookout, if you weren't passionate about solving the mobile phone problem, you were going to have a really hard time subsisting on our team, right? Like it was just going to not work. And I think in recruiting, you have to know what kind of person you're looking for, right? In our case, someone who's passionate about making the world a better place through improving healthcare, it's kind of required to show up here. You know, otherwise, you're going to find us all really boring and annoying.
It's something we're seeing from the recruitment angle across many industries as well. A big requirement from hiring managers is that they love to see people with a home lab and just spending their time tinkering with hardware or software, as you say, because that way, you know, you're completely immersed in that world, living and breathing it.
So it's something I've talked to Jeff, your colleague, about a whole lot, and I've worked with him before. We had a really great time, and he's become somebody that I trust and is a friend. But one of the things that I realized about Jeff's way of thinking and about all of you guys, is that cultural fit matters, right? And it's not about do you have a home LAN and does that show passion. It's more about, if I've got a team of people, does the way that this person interoperates fit? And, you know, like if you're coming to Scope, you kind of got to be interested in healthcare. When, you know, if I'm going to go work at a financial services firm, I hope I'm, you know, interested in financial services. I have to like the business, right? If I'm going to go work at a Bitcoin company and I hate Bitcoin, that's probably not going to work out. And so there's as much of the skill fit as is important, there's a culture fit that's important as well, right? And so there's almost no interview process that goes on for me that people haven't at the very least heard about our corporate values if I haven't actually just sent them the spreadsheet, the PDF, because we're a very values-driven organization, and if you're not willing to play by the rules we play by, which includes, you know, a focus on diversity, which includes a belief that any hospital in the world that doesn't have Scope probably has unmitigated risk, and we should be passionate evangelists for what we do because we're really trying to solve an important problem. Like, if you're not willing to do that, you're probably not going to fit here no matter what skills or talents you might have. And to me, like, there's a place better suited for you, right? That's not a negative thing. I think far too often when people interview and they don't get jobs, they take that as a failure of them. But in this case, I think it's just like there's a place for you no matter what your thing is. Go find that.
Well, we always strive to understand both parties, whether it's a client or a candidate. It is important to understand that fit. I'm sure Jeff will be pleased that he hit the nail on the head with you, but we don't need to massage his ego too much. I'm keen to talk to you a bit about COVID. Obviously, it has controlled the entire world throughout the last year. It is a healthcare crisis, which thankfully, you know, globally seems to be somewhat under control. We've got a long journey ahead. But one of the knock-on effects of that has been something like the chip shortage, for example, and a lot of people, like myself, waiting on a PlayStation 5. That's going to have a knock-on effect into healthcare and in your world as well. But I believe I'm right in saying your business was relatively young when the pandemic hit.
Yes.
So how was that for you guys?
I make the sort of flip comment of to a lot of people that, you know, if I could have picked any time in history to build a business that only sells to hospitals, this was probably the worst case scenario as far as that time, right? Scope really started in about September of 2019. So we were right about 6 months old when the pandemic hit. And so we had one customer on the platform. We had a lot of interest, but all of a sudden, the people that we were talking to be, you know, customers 2, 3, 4, 5, started saying things like, I'm really interested in this, but I need to call you back when I don't have tents full of people in my parking lot. And, you know, what were we going to say? In some ways, it was good for us, right? In some ways, it let us refocus on product, refocus on what we were building, and get the technology really stable and ready for when we come out of this, right? And luckily for us, we have great investors and we have a great team behind us, and we've been really lucky to have backing from people who get it and who understand that there's immense potential in this business. Because this is a huge problem that needs to be solved, and you know, there's not that many people out there trying to solve it. But yeah, the first year was rough, and especially we were about six people when the pandemic hit, and we had like there were days where the best thing any of us could say about what we were up to was, I don't have COVID today. Right. And managing a team through, and every manager in the world, every senior leader has gone through this in the last year. You're managing the mental health of your employees. You're managing their capacity and their ability to do work while at the same time live their lives in this completely unprecedented way. I mean, you know, I think probably one of the things that I've said to the team the most is, please get outside today. Right. Yeah. Like, you know, please get outside today is not exactly sage CEO wisdom. But like that's the world we've lived in for the last 12 months. And you know, the last 6 months have been much better, and people adapted first and then started to come out of it. But I will tell you, it has been the weirdest time in the world to start a healthcare company. And I think if we had been selling masks or telehealth software or something like that, it would have been a very productive and sort of, you know, wild time. But it was really hard a year ago to convince anyone that cybersecurity was a priority when the pandemic was filling their ICUs, right? And appropriately. But we know that now is the time for everybody to start that investment. Now people are really starting to wake back up. We, you know, where 12 months ago, I couldn't get anyone on the phone. Now I have more sales volume than we actually know what to do with. And it's really fantastic. And we're growing incredibly quickly.
Yeah, well, really pleased to hear that. That's certainly a nice positive note to end on. And I think, I hope that resonates with a lot of businesses generally. I'm going to forget about technology here for a second, because it's had a massive impact. But we're starting to see the end of the tunnel, aren't we? And fingers crossed. As you say, you're getting those calls in. People are starting to see the possibilities, the potential and the need for cybersecurity in healthcare. So things can only get better.
You bet. They totally get it. They totally get it.
Brilliant. Well, cheers, Mike. Look, all the best for the future. I'm sure we'll chat again in the future as well. Really enjoyed having you with us today, and to you and your team. Here's to a very fruitful 2021.
Thanks, Joe. Thanks for having me. It was a really great being here.
My thanks to Mike for joining us today. You can learn all about Scope Security online. Just head to scopesecurity.com. And thank you to you too for joining us on the Tech Stack. You can also learn about us at techfellow.co.uk, or give us a follow on all the main social media platforms. We're on Instagram, LinkedIn, and Twitter. And we'll see you very soon.